Hare Krishna. So, welcome everyone, and thank you all so much for coming. This is actually the final installment of a seminar we've been doing this weekend on the Ramayana, the story of Lord Ramachandra. And this particular class, you don't need to have attended the others, but I want to focus on on the most popular and most famous character in the story of the Ramayana. And that person is surprisingly not Lord Ramachandra. It is instead Hanuman. And particularly I want to talk about Hanuman and him as the model of an ideal servant of God, a devotee of Krishna. What does a devotee of Krishna look like? Well, when we think of Krishna's devotee, there are few examples that come to mind with more clarity than Hanuman. He is put forward again and again and again as the model servant of God. And why that's the case and what we can learn from his example is what we want to talk about. Now, to start off with, we'll read a short verse from Bhagavad Gita. Hanumanji is present in Bhagavad Gita, and that's in chapter 1 of the book, where he is present, where?
On the flag.
So Arjuna and Krishna are seated on a chariot in the battlefield, just the war is ready to begin, both sides are blowing their conch shells, and Hanuman is there as an emblem on the flag of Arjuna. And in this verse, Srila Prabhupada talks about the significance of Hanuman's presence there. So here it is. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 This is Bhagavad Gita chapter 1, text number 20. I will just read this myself. Verse translation and commentary.
Atha vyavasthitan drishtva dhartarashtran kapidhvaja pravritte shastra sampate dhanurudyam yapandava rishikesham tada vakyam idamaha mahipate.
Translation proper by his divine grace is Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra, drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Purport. The battle was just about to begin. It is understood from the above statement that the sons of Dhritarashtra were more or less disheartened by the unexpected arrangement of military force by the Pandavas, who were guided by the direct instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjuna is another sign of victory because Hanuman cooperated with Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravan, and Lord Ram emerged victorious. Now both Ram and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjuna to help him. Lord Krishna is Ram himself, and wherever Lord Ram is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore, Arjun had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever. And above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus, all good counsel was available to Arjun in the matter of executing the battle. In such auspicious conditions, arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee, lay the signs of assured victory. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalabhaya Chakshurun Miritam Jena Tasmai Shri. So Hanuman, he's known around the world as the ideal and most wonderful servant of Lord Ramachandra and in a model for service to God in general. And this is the case for many different reasons. The heart of Hanuman's story is told in the Ramayana, in a canto of the Ramayana called Sundarkand. Now, every canto of the Ramayana is named after the context of that section. So Balakanda is the story of childhood, Bala. The Aranyakanda is the story of the forest. Yuddhakanda is the story of the battle, Yuddha, and so on. But this one canto, Sundarkanda, is just called the beautiful canto. It's not given any name, any informative name beyond that. Just, this is the beautiful book. And the reason for that is very important. In fact, this is the only canto of the Ramayana where Lord Ram is not the central character. In the Balakanda, all the way to the Uttarkanda, the main person who is acting in all these sections of the Ramayana is Lord Ramachandra. But in Sundarkanda, the main character there, Lord Ram is certainly present, but the main hero of the story is Hanuman. And the reason it's called so beautiful is because what is most beautiful about the Lord's pastimes is in fact the way his devotees give everything in their service to the Lord. That relationship, as we've been talking about this weekend, between the Lord and his devotees. And nowhere does the devotee's sacrifice and the devotee's willingness and his desire and his expertise in serving the Lord become more clear and more evident than in Sundarkanda, because of Hanumanji. Now, here's the question before us. If we are to look at the character of Hanumanji, what can we learn about what it means to be a devotee? What is the recipe, so to speak, about for being a devotee of the Lord, a servant of God? Not just someone who feels something for him, but someone who can actually call themselves a servant of God, who's willing to do something for the Lord. What is the character of that person? And what can we learn about that person from the character of Hanumanji? So, the first thing to note is if we want to be a servant of the Lord, in order to be the servant, the first thing we need that allows us to serve the Lord is what? Humility. What other options?
Surrender.
Surrender. Love.
Tolerance.
Tolerance.
Desire to help.
Desire to help.
Sorry.
Patience. All of these things are important qualities for devotees, no doubt. But the very first thing we need for service, to do any real service, is empowerment. Is permission or privilege to do that service by being empowered by another devotee. We cannot force our way into the court of God. We cannot insist that I will serve you. We have to remember that service is a privilege. It's a privilege that you are given, not a privilege that you can claim. It's not a right. It's a privilege we get. When I was taking driver's education many years ago, my teacher kept telling us in the theoretical part again and again, like a broken record, this one point: driving is not a right. No one has the right to drive. It is a privilege. And if you don't use that privilege properly, by speeding too much, getting too many tickets, and too many points on your license, that privilege will be taken away. And there's nothing you can do to say, no, I'm a citizen and I have this right to drive. You don't. Right? It's a privilege. It's given to you. Devotional service is a privilege. When devotees wake up in the morning, we worship Tulsi. Even in the evening, we did this just before Aarti to the deity, right? And we sing there. E nive dhanadharo sakhir anugato koro seva adhikar diye koro nijadas. Seva adhikar diyo means give me the privilege of doing devotional service. I cannot claim it. I cannot say this is my adhikar. It has to be given to me. So when we get service from the Lord, we have to realize that we're very lucky to receive any service. If someone asked us so much as to, can you please sweep the temple after the feast because things are messy, that's a privilege. We may think we're doing that devotee a favor, but in fact they're doing us a favor, because we've just been handed empowerment. To serve the Lord, the first thing we need is to be empowered. And we see this in the story of Hanumanji very clearly. Four different sets of monkeys are sent to different parts of India, north, south, east, and west, to search for Sita after she's been kidnapped by Ravan. The party that goes south is the one that has the greatest hope of finding her, because various kinds of clues, like her jewelry that's been dropped along the way, have pointed in that direction. And in that party are some of the greatest generals of Sugriva's army, the greatest monkeys and bears, these semi-divine monkeys and bears who are out to look for Sita Devi. And in that party is also Hanuman. There's Hanuman and the Jambant and the Nun and Neel and Angad, and all these great generals head towards the south. They work the way through the south, scanning and looking at every different place and every cave and every hole they can find to see if Sita Devi is hidden somewhere. And ultimately they reach the tip, the southern tip of India, and find out there that she is probably on the other end of the ocean in Lanka. So the question is how to get there. And each one of the monkeys, well, they're looking for a solution, right? And if there's one thing that monkeys do very well, it's jump. They're good at jumping, swinging. And so each one is trying what they're good at. They jump and they test. I can get this far or that far or that far. And there are some who are very, very qualified, very powerful. Jambant, he's a bear, he's not a monkey. But he is very ancient. He's the son of Lord Brahma. And he's been around already by this point for 2 million years. So he's a ripe old man by this point. And he is saying, well, in my youth, I could have done this easily. I circumambulated the whole universe 7 times. But I can't do it anymore. I'm not strong enough. One of the monkeys says, I have enough strength to jump to Lanka, but I won't be able to get back. No worries. So they all try their best. But there's one monkey who has not yet spoken up. In fact, he's rather depressed, sitting in a corner, not speaking, because he doesn't know what the solution is. And that monkey who hasn't spoken yet is Hanuman. Jambant notices this, and he goes to Hanuman, and he tells him, Hanuman, you can do it. And Hanuman says, me? No. All of you are so much more strong than I am. I can't do it. There's no way in the world I could do it. And Jambant says, no, you are the one who's going to do this. Have you forgotten your past? Have you forgotten your childhood? Hanumanji, when he was little, he jumped for the sun. He thought it was an orange in the sky. And he jumped for it to eat it. And succeeded. Until Lord Indra intervened and struck him down with his thunderbolt. The thunderbolt hit him on the chin, broke his chin, and he fell to the ground. And therefore he got the name Hanuman. The word Hanu means chin. Hanuman. He reminds him of his past. And as Hanuman remembers his past, he feels this courage and this strength and this determination rise up within him. And he says, yes, I can do it. And he climbs up at the peak of the highest mountain on the coast. And with a great call of Jai Shri Ram, he jumps across the ocean toward Lanka. The Valmiki Ramayana Sundarkand describes very beautifully how when he makes this jump, the force is so great that the whole mountain shakes, and the season is such that all the trees are flowering with beautiful white flowers, and they break off the trees, flowers fall off, and they get caught up in the wind that Hanuman creates as he's jumping with so much speed. And so they follow him, these flowers, for some distance. So he looks like a comet streaking across the sky. A beautiful, beautiful image of how he jumps for us. But the point here is this. Hanumanji was able to do this amazing feat to serve Lord Ramachandra because he was empowered. He was given that privilege by someone, told, I think you can do this. And even when he thought he couldn't, Jambavant insisted, yes, you can. We can count ourselves very fortunate if we have in our own lives, in our own spiritual lives, someone who comes to us and is able to give us service and give us the confidence that, yes, you can. You can do this service. Srila Prabhupada was like that with his disciples. He would tell a disciple that you need to start Back to Godhead magazine in the United States. And the disciple had never run a magazine before, never written magazine articles before. But Prabhupada said, no, you can do it. And just by the empowerment born of that instruction, they did it. And they became one of the greatest writers in our movement today, Satsuru Maharaj. Similarly, Prabhupada would send a disciple off to China and said, you need to go there and give Krishna consciousness. And the disciple would say, no, Prabhupada, I'm not going there. That's not a good idea. In fact, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he describes how one of Prabhupada's close disciples, he describes how this happened. That he was seated in a room with Prabhupada and he was complaining to Prabhupada about the conflicts between different managers in the movement. And off the cuff, he got irritated at some point, and he said, you know, there's conflict between two different people. One of them, we should go to China. As in, like, we should get rid of them. And Prabhupada said, that's a great idea. Why don't you go to China? And Tamakisha Maharaj relates that he was really, really distressed. He said, no, Prabhupada, I didn't mean that. I was just like, and Prabhupada, no, he liked the idea. He said, you need to go to China, and you can do it. Go. And he went. And today, one of the most vibrant and developed areas of our movement is in China. Of course, no one knows much about it because it's all underground. It's a communist country. But very, very nicely developed. Just from that one instruction, go. So we see the first thing in bhakti is empowerment. We get the privilege. Seva adhikari dhir purani. We get the empowerment to do that service from someone. We're handed that privilege. Now, once we get that empowerment, then after that, we need a goal. We need determination to reach a goal. Hanumanji stood up on that mountain and he jumped towards Lanka. It was a goal that any other person would have said is bound for failure. Who can jump across the ocean? But he had this goal in mind. He had a mission, in other words. And he decided, yes, I have to work towards that mission. We see that in our lives, we don't achieve anything without goals and without missions. Nothing. You can't get educated. You can't keep down the job. You can't do anything without a mission, without a goal. Hanuman set his sights towards Lanka, made that his goal, and headed off to achieve, to succeed. Now, I have a question for you. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Karmanyeva vikaraste ma phaleshu kadachina. We should do our duty without any desire for the results, the fruits. So, was Hanuman acting against that instruction? How can we serve the Lord without having goals in His service? What does it mean when Krishna says, don't do the work for the fruit? How do we understand that in the context of Hanuman, who really set out to achieve a goal?
For self-enjoyment.
Good. So the first thing is, what's the nature of that goal? Krishna is not rejecting every kind of goal in Bhagavad Gita. He's rejecting some goals. What kind of goals? Goals that are selfish, personally motivated goals. Goals that are just for me. Obviously, if he's telling Arjuna to fight, he's asking him to keep a goal in mind, right? He's not telling him, just pick up your bow and shoot arrows anywhere you like. And if they hit your target or not, doesn't matter. Your job is to shoot. No. He's asking him to fight. Well, Hanumanji is not going to get on the mountain and jump in any direction he likes, because the idea is to jump. No, he's got a goal in mind. So we have to choose our goals carefully and say, what is the goal? What is the mission that the Lord wants me to fulfill in my life? What is my mission? What is my goal? Okay, in general, I understand. This is my goal. We want to achieve love for God. We want to go back to Godhead. We want to become liberated, yes. But what is my goal? What is the service the Lord has given to me? And how can I accomplish that? What am I being empowered for? Right? Empowerment is not a general phenomenon. We don't just get general empowerment. Empowerment is given with a specific goal in mind. You're empowered for something, not in general. The only person who's empowered in general is Krishna. He's got power for everything and anything. But the human being is not all powerful. We have empowerment for something very specific. And we need to ask ourselves, what is the goal for which I am empowered? Now, once that goal is more or less clear, it's not going to be 100% clear early on. Even Hanuman was not 100% sure what his goal was. He knew the general goal, find Mother Sita. But specifically what he needed to do in Lanka, as we'll see in a minute, he didn't know. He didn't know how he would execute that goal. So that's the third question. I'm empowered. I have a general idea of a goal. Now, how do I find it? How do I execute it? How do I accomplish that goal? And here we see the really special character of Hanuman. Just how wonderful he was, and just how expertly he fulfilled, he achieved the goal that he was given, which was to find Mother Sita. When he arrives in Lanka, there are maybe 4 or 5 different roles that Hanuman has to fulfill. The first is detective. He has to find Sita. Now, this is not an easy thing to do because he's never seen her. And so he doesn't know exactly what she looks like or what condition she'll be in. He knows in general she's very beautiful. He knows she's chaste. He knows that she's very powerful, effulgent, the goddess of fortune. He knows in general, but he doesn't know. There are many qualified women in Lanka. And when he first arrives there, he thinks, Ravana's captured her against her will. Let's go see where Ravana is. He's probably got her in captivity somewhere. So he enters Ravana's palace. And there he finds so many beautiful women, all belonging to Ravana. He was a rakshasa, a demon, a man-eater. And this was what they did. They kidnapped beautiful women. They killed human beings. They were ogres. And he finds so many in the palace. And the Ramayana says that he goes and examines everyone. Could this be Sita? Could this be Sita? This is the middle of the night. They're all asleep. And halfway through, he feels really bad. You know why? He thinks, I'm in someone else's home, looking at someone else's wives. This is really bad. It's very immoral. And you know, Hanumanji is a brahmachari. He's single. He's taken a vow of celibacy. And here I am, beautiful women, in the middle of the night, as they sleep, looking them up and down, closely, to figure out if they're Sita. And he gets really disheartened and very upset. He thinks this is wrong. He says, what am I doing? And so he stops. But then he thinks about it a little bit. And he says, look, I'm not here to see other men's wives for my own enjoyment in the way that we might ogle someone else as we pass them on the street because they're beautiful. I'm not here for that reason. I'm looking at them because I've got a mission, which is to find Sita Devi. Again, the goal, right? What is the goal? Is it for us or is it for God? And that distinction is very fine. You know, so often we, in serving the Lord, have to do things that are pleasing, that are nice. Like for Hanumanji, looking at beautiful women is a pleasing thing to do. We all know that. And so in our service, we often get pleasing things to do. Things that give us pleasure, that give us position, that give us status, that give us some kind of enjoyment. And we start off thinking, I'm doing this for the Lord. And we end up doing it for ourselves. What happens is, unlike Hanuman, we go into the palace looking for Sita and end up going, wow, she's beautiful. When that wasn't the reason we went into the first place. We become distracted in our goal. And I came to lead kirtan for Krishna, and I ended up thinking the whole time what the people were thinking about me as I was singing. Did they like my kirtan or not? So it changed, right? I started looking at the object that I was going to use for service. I started using it for my own enjoyment. And that we learned very carefully from Hanuman's experience. How conscious he was of this, and how he checked himself. Right? He was very cautious in this regard. Why am I doing this? What's the purpose? Do I have the right motivation or not? And of course he did. But the fact that he checks himself and thinks about it is a great lesson for us. That in our service, we always have to ask, every service to Krishna will bring us joy, will bring us many benefits. That's the nature of God. Right? Any contact with the Lord brings good things. It will bring good things to us, devotional service. Our life will become better. And that's good. But we have to ask ourselves, am I still doing it for Krishna? Or am I doing it for the good things that I got on the way? That we have to ask. So his first role is as detective. The second thing he has to do is counselor. When he does find Sita Devi, she is in a state of great anxiety, great fear, great worry, great sadness. And when he finds her in that condition, Hanuman realizes that not only does he have to find her, but there's something else he has to do. He has to make sure that she has enough hope to continue living until Rama comes, until he arrives. Because she could have been killed any moment, but she was holding out by the strength of her own power, her own determination. I will not succumb to these rakshasas, these man-eaters. But that determination was fading fast. And she was in a state of great worry and sadness. And so he realized that besides finding her, I've got another job to do here. I have to make sure that the person receiving the message, I leave her in a good condition. And so he encourages her. He builds confidence in her. Yes, I'm a servant of the Lord. She doesn't believe him at first. She looks at him and she thinks this is another one of Ravana's tricks. frankly, a monkey shows up and claims that he's a representative of God. She's not convinced. And Hanumanji has to convince her. We talked about this actually earlier. He convinces her by describing Lord Ramachandra's glories, by describing the beauty of his form and body in such close detail that she thinks this person has to have seen Ram at least. And he glorifies Lord Ramachandra so well that she's convinced that no matter how cunning Ravana is, he would never praise Ram. No matter how deceptive he is, he would never praise Ram. So this must be a devotee. You see, our job as devotees of Krishna, our goal that Prabhupada gave to us, is the same as Hanumanji's. Hanuman's goal was to reunite Sita with Ram. Sita is the energy of the Lord, his Shakti, his power. This whole world is Krishna's energy. All living entities are Krishna's energy. They're his part and parcel. And as his devotees, it is our job to take Krishna's energy and use it in his service. To say, Krishna, all this money, this is Lakshmi. Right? We call money Lakshmi. Sita. And here this Lakshmi is being used for all kinds of nefarious purposes. Drinking, gambling, and all kinds of illicit behavior. Let me instead use this Lakshmi in your service. And in this way we bring Sita back to Ram. This person, this child of mine, is your Shakti. He's Tatastha Shakti, the Lord's marginal energy. As a result, he's your servant. Or she's your servant. Let me help this child become a devotee of Krishna. Let me raise my child as Krishna's servant. We're bringing Sita back to Ram. This wonderful food is your energy. Let me offer it to you instead of consuming it for myself. This is bringing Sita back to Ram. We have to act as the messenger. But what we learn from Hanuman's case is that just because we say we're the messenger of God, just because we say we're bringing Krishna's message, doesn't mean anyone's going to believe us. We have to be convincing enough. We have to be genuine enough in our message that the person we are trying to convince says, yeah, this has to be someone who is really a devotee of the Lord. Because there's way more people in this world who pretend to be the Lord's devotee but are not actually than there are genuine devotees. We're all hiding a pretender in our heart somewhere. There's someone fake inside. The hypocrite who wants to look like a devotee but doesn't want to behave like one. That hypocrite we have to get rid of. That pretender we have to get rid of in our hearts. So that we can become genuine enough that when the Lord's energy sees us, she says, oh, this must be the servant of the Lord. Who else could it be? Because no fake devotee would praise the Lord in such a way. No fake person would know the Lord so well like this person does. So as messenger, as counselor, Hanuman had that role to convince Sita of his own genuineness. Because the burden of proof is not on her, it's on him. The burden of proof is always on the messenger to make sure that the person receiving the message believes that they are genuine. That's our burden as devotees of God. To be so genuine in our behavior that anyone who sees us says, yes, this person is genuine. This is not the pretender that I think he is. The other aspect of his role as counselor was to convince her that Lord Ramachandra will in fact come. That his strength is enough, that he has enough power behind him to defeat this army of monkeys. Because she's worried. he'll come on his own? Will he be able to fight all these rakshasas and so much power? And so Hanuman describes the whole monkey army and how strong they are, Nal and Neel and Angad and Jambavan, how much capacity they have, and convinces her, yes, the Lord can do this. And he leaves her in a state of great hope. And this is the role of the devotee. We're messengers of hope. We have to act in such a way in the world, when we go out into the world, that people who see us immediately feel a sense of hope, a presence of Krishna. They may not start chanting Hare Krishna, they may not come to the temple even, but they know there's something about hanging out with this person that gives me happiness, that gives me hope, that gives me joy. That's the power of a devotee. And you'll see, those who are devotees, people feel in this way, they feel a certain cooling presence in their company, a confidence, a hope that is given to them. So Hanuman was detective. He was counselor. He was a spy. He decided that he had to find out the capacities, the military capacity of Ravana, so he could report back to Lord Ram, so they knew what they were up against. And so he goes into all, he allows himself to be caught. He makes a ruckus on purpose, allows himself to be caught by Ravana's people, even though they really don't have the ability to do so. He allows himself to be done, just so they will take him into their ramparts and into their palaces. And on the way he observes their storehouses of weapons, their armories. He observes the palaces, he observes the fortifications, he observes the army, he observes the great soldiers, he meets them. They send one after another, they send fighters to fight with Hanuman. When the first one can't defeat him, they send someone stronger. When they can't defeat him, they send someone stronger. Ravana sends his sons one after another. And each one Hanuman fights with and disposes of and gets a sense of how powerful the enemy is. When he sends Indrajit, Hanuman knows, okay, I've reached the peak. Right? This is it. Indrajit was it. He was really, besides Ravana, there was no one more powerful than him. And so he allows himself to be caught just so he can go and meet Ravana. In our service to the Lord, okay, we may not have to serve as spies. We probably don't. But what we can see from this is that the task that we have at hand is not necessarily an easy one to accomplish. As Hanuman is fighting with these warriors, he's risking so much. He's risking his life even. And he's voluntarily accepting a state of danger and difficulty because he knows it's part of his service. It's part of the mission that he performs. In fact, one of the things that we see from Hanuman's time in Lanka is that service for the Lord is anything but easy. Hanumanji, we know him as the great victor who picks up mountains and jumps across oceans and goes into situations fearlessly. But if you read Sundarkanda, you find that Hanumanji has a very difficult time. Not just on a physical level, fighting. Actually, on a physical level, he doesn't. It's on the personal, on the emotional level. As he's going to see, to look for Mother Sita, and he cannot find her, he gets deeply depressed. And he thinks, I'm a failure. I tried to do my service, and I failed. I'm not worth showing my face to Ramachandra again. He thinks, let me just go to some faraway place and spend my life performing austerities, penance for my failure in his service. Because what good will it be for me to show my useless face to the Lord? I failed in the mission he gave. And he becomes so deeply depressed that he cannot move. He can't continue looking for her. But he inspires himself again. He says, no, I've been given the mission. And if I've been given the mission, I've been given the power to complete that mission. Again, the point of empowerment we were talking about in the beginning. If you've been given the mission, you've been given the power to complete that mission. So, I have to do it. Stay determined. Let's keep going. And he essentially preaches to himself, because there is no one else. And inspires himself, because there is no one else to inspire. We have, fortunately, so many to inspire us. Says, I have to do it. And he continues again. And again he becomes depressed. 2-3 times this happens as he's searching for Mother Sita. Until he finally finds her. So, the task is not easy. The task is not easy necessarily at all. But with enthusiasm and determination, nectar of instruction, yes, we can accomplish that task. The fourth and final role he serves in Lanka is as ambassador, as representative. He has to deliver Rama's message to Sita, but he also has to deliver Lord Rama's message to Ravana and warn him of what he's doing as not being good. And we know the story of how he goes in, he's taken in to Ravana's court. And there he tells him, he says, Lord Rama is so kind that even now he's willing to forgive you. All you have to do is ask and take Sita back. I know my Lord, he is that kind, even after everything you've done. He represents his power. He gives him a taste. And he does this how? By burning Lanka. He takes the flame on his tail. And he jumps from home, from palace to palace. And ramparts, and the armory, and so on. To give him a fair warning. This is what's to come. So as messenger, as counselor, as ambassador, as detective. In so many ways, when Hanuman goes to Lanka, he fulfills so many roles. He's so expert in how he does everything. So skilled. And he succeeds gloriously. When he returns to Lord Ramachandra, Lord Ram has no words in this world to thank him. I was saying earlier today that when the whole war is over, Sita Devi comes to Hanuman and says, there's no way in this world I can thank you enough. There's no gift I can give you that befits the favor you have done to me. And so all you can do is accept my gratitude. Because how can I ever repay you? This is how the Lord feels towards those devotees who serve him selflessly. He becomes indebted, ingratiated towards us. The gopis say the same thing in Bhagavatam. When they sing, Tavakathamritam takta jivanam kavibhiri ritam kalma shapaham shavanamangalam srimadatatam bhuvigrinandiye bhuridajana. That those people who give Krishna's message to others. What's the message? That's the ring. Right? The ring that we give, this is in the form of that knowledge. The teaching, the books, this is the message. And those who give this message, the gopi says, of your kathamrita, the nectar of your instruction, Bhurida, there is no one more generous in this world than they are. No one more glorious. Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. He says, for one who explains the secret to the devotees, for one who explains this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to those who are sincere, there is no servant in this world more dear to me than that person. And Hanumanji was just that example. Now, one thing to end with. Even though we're talking about Hanuman as the model servant, we may not necessarily get a mission like Hanuman. We may not necessarily get to be like Hanuman. We may end up having to serve like Jatayu, who was also given a mission by the Lord, and who thought that, oh, I wasn't successful. He wasn't, right? As he attacked Ravana, Ravana cut his wing off. He was a vulture. Cut off his wing and he fell to the ground. But was he a success?
Yes.
100%. Because success is not measured in our eyes or in Ravana's eyes. It's measured in the eyes of the Lord. And the Lord places Jatayu's head on his lap as he's dying and tells him, you can now go to my supreme abode. I give you permission. We might end up having to be a messenger in the mode of the squirrel who helped Lord Ramachandra build his bridge to Lanka. That squirrel did not lift mountains, he did not break off trees, he did not jump across oceans. All he did was bring a small pebble and drop it into the ocean. The nature of our mission is not what's important. Whether we think we are successful or not is not important. It's how we do that mission, how we accomplish it. Can we accomplish it with the determination, with the expertise, with the selflessness of heart that Hanuman showed? That is what gives us success in the eyes of Lord. And that's the secret of the process of bhakti. Bhakti is all about taking the privilege of devotional service when we are given that privilege. Taking that mission to our hearts, no matter how small or how big it may be, and saying, I'm going to do it. If it means putting a pebble into the ocean, I will. If it means jumping across the ocean, I will. But I will try to do it with as much determination, selflessness, and focus that I can possibly muster. And in this way, Prabhupada says, we can be a hero in the service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains that there are two great stories in the history of the world, Mahabharata and Ramayana. And in both cases, the heroes were the devotees of the Lord, the Vaishnavas. So we all have that opportunity. In the beautiful movie of the Lord, in his life, in his Leela, we can play a shining role in that service. A shining role. We can't play the chief role. Okay? In the movie, we can't be best actor or best actress. That role is taken. Hanumanji. He's the best. But we can be best supporting actor and best supporting actress. We can do our role in the movie as best as we possibly can. Right? And that should be our goal. Not can I be Hanuman, but what can I do to facilitate Hanuman's service to the Lord? He's bringing Sita back to Ram. What can I do to help in that process? And that's our goal. If we can do that, we can count ourselves successful as devotees. Thank you so much for your attention.
Very well.